Are you ready for a travel adventure? How about an exciting trip to Venice or an exhilarating experience in Bangkok? Maybe you were more about a culinary adventure in Barcelona or just a relaxing day cruising the canals of Amsterdam. Join the Professor Travel as he invites you on an epic excursion, one that has you traveling the globe with him. Come and experience a world of culture, a world of history and architecture, a world of food and experiences to broaden your mind and save you time and money as you travel. Learn more, discuss more, travel more, and enjoy life more. And now your host, the Professor Travel.
Greetings, students, and welcome to this special edition of The Professor Travel Domestic Edition. I am your host, The Professor Travel, coming to you from Orange County, California. This is the website, the vlog, and the podcast that you come to in order to learn more about different travel destinations. This is where you come in order to discuss them as a community. Hopefully, this will inspire you to travel more and ultimately enjoy life more. Now, you can reach me on a variety of different social media sites, including my website, which is at theprofessortravel.com. On YouTube, Facebook, and on TikTok now, you can reach me at The Professor Travel. If you're an Instagrammer, you can reach me there at @the_professor_travel. If you're a Twitterer, I guess, you can reach me on Twitter at @theprofessortr1. And then if you're a blogger, you can find me on Blogspot at theprofessortravel.blogspot.com. Today I have a wonderful series of guests with me. Our visiting professors today are Amy and Bob McCormick, coming to us from Alaska today. Say hi, guys.
Hey.
Welcome. Thank you so much for doing this for me. I really am very excited to learn all about Alaska. But before we get started, can I get a little bit of, just so my students have some context, can I get a little bit of background from you guys, whether it's education or some of your travels?
Well, I grew up in Orange County, California, and I became teacher certified there and started teaching there. And then I've also taught in Guam, Hawaii, and also in Alaska for about 7 years.
Nice. How about you, Bob?
I grew up in Southern California also, and joined the Coast Guard back in 91. And then was stationed out in Guam, did 4 years out there, and then got out, did some traveling, Africa, Middle East.
Nice.
And then went back in the Coast Guard, and then we came up here to Alaska back in 04. Mm-hmm. And then we've done a bunch of traveling since then.
Fantastic. And I get a chance to follow you guys on Facebook. You guys have some of the most amazing travel adventures. I'm waiting to hear more about all of them. You guys just blow me away with the pictures that you do and all the videos. So keep them coming. That's fantastic. Okay. Well, today's conversation, we're going to talk about Alaska. So let's get started with talking a little bit about that. In terms of the history of Alaska, can you guys share what you know about the history of Alaska?
Sure. So really, as far as folks outside of the Native community coming into Alaska, Russians kind of came here back in 1800s for sea otter pelts, and trapping was a big market for them back then. So that went on for a while, and then in 1898. It was actually purchased by the United States from Russia, and they called that Seward's Folly. Seward was one of the person that was in charge of that purchase, and they bought it for like $7.2 million. And everybody thought he was crazy. And then in the late 1800s, they discovered gold, then later oil and fish. Nice. So they definitely got their money's worth out of that purchase.
Very nice.
Yeah. So they had discovered gold in the late 1800s, statehood in 1959. They discovered oil in the 70s. Or no, in the 60s.
And that's when they constructed the pipeline.
Yep. And then finished the transatlantic pipeline in 1977 that goes from Prudhoe Bay down to Valdez. Mm.
And I do know that we've had some challenges up in that area. I remember in the 1990s, the Exxon Valdez obviously had a major spill up in that area. That was a world-wide thing.
1990.
89.
1989? Yeah, it was when we were in high school.
It was like 11 million gallons of crude oil that was spilt in the Valdez Bay there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and the other thing I remember in terms of history was I remember sometime there was a, I want to say it was in the early 1900s, somewhere between the 1900s to all the way to 1950s, somewhere in that area. So it's a very large swath. There was a major earthquake in the Bay Area, and that triggered an avalanche, which then triggered a massive tsunami, which again, you know, just hit the area and just crashed, doing a lot of damage, wiping out a lot of, you know, livelihoods at that point. But of course, Alaska is sparsely populated, so not a huge amount of lives were destroyed at that point, but it was like, it's still a major event based on the stuff. And you guys do get up in that area. I think there are significant seismic events that happen in that area.
There are quite a lot of earthquakes every once in a while.
Yeah. Okay. Well, talk to me about the geography of the area. It's, I know it doesn't border any other states, but it does border Canada.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, just because I know you keep hearing occasionally, you know, I can see Russia from my house. How far exactly is Russia from Alaska? Do you guys know?
Well, once you get out the Aleutian Chain, which extends thousands, you know, a couple thousand miles.
It is pretty close.
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah. You, it's not like here in Juneau, we're sitting on our back porch and we can...
it's like, oh, here it is.
If you get out the chain, if you actually do an overlay of Alaska over the continental U.S., it extends from coast to coast. It covers that much area.
It's a lot bigger than I think people realize.
We were talking with some friends the other day, and right now Alaska is all on one time zone, but years ago it was four or five different time zones.
Or more than that.
More than that, maybe six.
For a while.
Wow.
So that's how much distance it actually covers once you get out the end of the Aleutian Chain.
Yeah, it's about somewhere between a third to about half the size of the continental United States. It's very large.
It's huge. Yeah. So,
and then you also have like massive glaciers up in that area as well. I mean, just huge swaths of ice that go for hundreds of miles in some cases.
Right.
Yeah.
So just crazy huge. But again, it's not, I mean, people shouldn't be given the misconception that the entire thing is just coated in ice all the time. I mean, especially during the summer months, you get a lot of foliage and there's a lot of wildlife, and it's really quite beautiful and lush.
Yeah. And it's very diverse too. I mean, there's some areas far up north where it's just really flat. And then, you know, as you get farther, there's tundra. And then when you get down where we are right now in Southeast Alaska, it's super mountainous and there's rivers and waterfalls and ocean, and it's a lot of rain too.
And down here in Southeast Alaska where we are, it's actually classified as a rainforest because of the amount of rainfall that we get.
Which I find fascinating. It's just one of those things I think that's like people are actually very surprised to learn about.
Right.
Just because they're like, they don't think in terms of that as being a rainforest, but I guess you would consider it because of all the foliage that's in the area.
Right.
I know you guys are a very active couple. I get to see you doing a lot of different activities. Is there a specific, like, are there favorite activities that you guys have within the area, whether it's hiking, biking, canoeing, kayaking?
Yes.
Yes.
All of you.
And people here are really active. I mean, people love kayaking in the summer, hiking, climbing, and then even through the whole winter. I mean, there's sort of a notion that everybody just sort of hibernates in the winter, but we learned from living up here, people become even more active in the winter because there's ice climbing and cross-country skiing and downhill skiing and everything, ice skating outside on the lakes. And even in the schools, because I worked in the schools here, they teach... I mean, I was really impressed coming from Southern California. They were teaching cross-country skiing as part of their PE class here.
That's kind of cool, actually. No pun intended, but it's like really cool. So very cool. So the place doesn't just shut down in the wintertime?
No.
It's
here in Juneau, there's a ski resort. So we did a lot of snowboarding up there. We got into cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, ice skating.
Very cool. Nice. Yeah. That's, so it sounds like there's a lot of different activities, no matter what time of year you want to go there at.
It is. All year, you can be really busy. So.
That leads us to the weather. Okay. In terms of the weather, when do the winter months hit?
Starting by November.
Yeah, about November till March, April.
Yeah. Well, here in Juneau, we'll start getting snow in October, at least by Halloween, okay. Which is kind of sad for the kids because they're all bundled up with their costumes, their big jackets, and like, tell me, describe your costume to me.
Sure. Well, everybody's on Zoom these days anyway, so it's like, now it's no big deal. But you guys also get the aurora a little bit, not specifically in Juneau, but as you get further north, you guys get the aurora borealis.
Right. Yeah, we get it in Juneau, but I think because it rains here, we don't see it as much. Mm.
And we tend to be a little bit out of that arc.
Yeah.
For the northern latitudes, where you really get a good view of it.
But there is an aurora forecast website, so if you ever come visit in the winter, be sure to check it out.
I will take you up on that. Thank you. Yeah. So in terms of culture within the general area, obviously there is a big Native American population that's up in there, so that leads to a lot of the original culture. But there's also, as you made mention, Bob, there's a Russian presence that's up there too, especially up in the Sitka area. And then you have the Americanized groupings that are up in that area too. In terms of religion, is there any predominant religion that's in Alaska that sticks out to you, or is it
diverse? Actually,
yeah, the primary one is Christianity.
Okay,
but there's a lot of there's really a lot of diversity up here. You get up to like interior areas like Bethel. I visited there once, and it's a very remote area. And there's a huge Korean population from Southern California.
Oh wow, very cool.
Yeah, there's big South Pacific. Pacific Islander presence up here, Filipino.
Yeah. So I've seen Buddhist, Hindu, Catholic, like, you know, all of the different religions. Yeah. And then the Native Americans they honor the stories and the myths, and they really continue teaching that to their kids. And but then they also go to the Christian churches, and so they're learning both their ancestral religions, but also a lot of them are still Christian. There's a Jewish temple. Mm-hmm. I've seen, yeah, it's really diverse here in Juneau anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think up in Anchorage too.
Nice. I would imagine probably Fairbanks too. And yeah. considering there's like a college town there. So there's definitely stuff going on there. In terms of art, now I know that when I think of Juneau or any of the other areas that are up in Alaska, no real big museums tend to stand out to me, except for maybe some of the Native American museums that might be in the area. Mm-hmm. But you may mention to me before we started broadcasting a little bit more about the music scene that comes once a year to Juneau. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Okay, so folk music and bluegrass is really popular in this area, not just Juneau, but I think throughout Southeast, even up in Anchorage. They do a lot of barn dances and contra dancing, which is sort of like square dancing. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of fiddle players and banjo players. So once a year, they have what's called the Alaska Folk Festival, mm-hmm. where the town practically just shuts down, and people from all over Alaska come to it to watch it or participate and play in music. And they sign up for different slots to play music. It's totally free, and it starts in the morning and goes all night, pretty much. And people will be in small groups outside practicing and playing. And then there's the main stage inside where there are the feature bands that lead up into the evening, usually around 8 or 9 o'clock.
And we won't typically hear about this because it typically happens before the tourism season hits.
It does. It's in April. It's I think it helps that it's towards the end of the winter, like beginning of spring, where it's really rainy and muddy, and maybe the trails aren't as appealing. So it gives people something to do for
shake them out of their winter funk.
Yeah, it's kind of like, hey, welcome to spring. This is kind of gonna be kind of fun, and it gives people an opportunity to interact, network, and you know, I imagine that that's kind of important, especially when you live in remote communities, and it's like, oh, well, you know, you just want to try and get to know people once in a while.
Right.
So,
yeah.
In terms of the oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Really, oh, it's just a really unique experience. It's just totally, and it's totally free. So,
So why not take advantage of it? It sounds kind of cool.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now in terms of language in that area, obviously English is probably one of the more predominant languages, but there's a couple of others that are spoken up in your area too, right?
Right. Well, for the native Alaskan language in our region, the common ones are Tlingit and Haida. Those are the native tribes. And so they have a language which they actually teach a little bit in the school to all of the students. They have a native Alaska class starting in kindergarten, I think through high school, where they learn a bit, little bit. But there's also Russian and obviously English. So.
Big disclaimer, I tried to learn the Cyrillic alphabet at one point. I didn't do very well with it. So, It's a tough one. So, but also, in terms of the culture there, there's obviously a lot of food to be had. And so you have the obvious ones that come to mind are Alaskan king crab and salmon, obviously just a huge season for that. But I mean, any other things that I'm forgetting that come to mind in terms of the different types of cuisine or the food that's up in that area?
Halibut.
Halibut.
It's a real big one.
Yeah.
Pacific cod.
Nice.
Yeah.
Dungeness crab.
And you'll find it at all of the restaurants. And then people hunt.
Mm, you were saying both deer, bear, all kinds of stuff.
Moose, elk.
Yeah. I don't see that for sale, though.
No. A lot of times we'll trade with folks. When we were living up here, we would do a lot of fishing, and then we would just trade fish for some deer meat or something like that.
I remember, and I think I was talking to you guys just before we started broadcasting this, I had gone up there many, many years ago, and I did a whitewater rafting tour while I was up there. And during a break in that, we had a meat, and I was like, oh, what is this? And they're like, eat it first, and then we'll talk about it later. And it was like reindeer, and I was like, I'm like a sixth grader going, oh my gosh, I just ate Bambi. This is so sad. Or I just ate Rudolph. It was sad. So I was like, oh well, you know, it's like dreams go to die. And sometimes.
You get used to it, though. I mean, it becomes common.
Yeah. It actually, like, what I had, it kind of tasted like pepperoni. It was, like, a little bit greasy, but it was, like, but it was really made well. So, I mean, I was happy with it.
Yeah.
So very cool. Now, in terms of sports, now, there's not a lot of professional sports teams that are in that area, but one of the world-renowned things that's up in that area is the Iditarod, which is the dog sled race. And Bob, you had a little bit of knowledge about the history of this, correct?
Yeah, so the Iditarod actually started, it stemmed from back in 1925. There was a diphtheria epidemic up in Nome, Alaska, and they were out of serum for it. Oh. So they had to get some serum, this 20-pound container of it from Anchorage, Alaska, up to Nome, which is about 1,000 miles in the winter. So they, this long history of dog sledding up here. So they actually took it up there by dog sled and raced it up there to treat the folks up there that were suffering from that epidemic up there.
Nice.
And then they just kind of continued the history of it. And now there's a yearly Iditarod race that starts in Anchorage and then goes up to Nome.
And I know, like Amy, you were saying to me earlier, it is a little bit controversial because obviously it's the dogs, but hopefully, you know, at one point or another, they're given a break because obviously it's a little bit of a trek to go 1,000 miles. So that's obviously a little bit of a craziness. And you were saying that there is actually a state holiday. Is that correct?
There is. I'm not sure.
Is it statehood day?
A huge deal. Yeah. I don't recall them doing parades or anything much for it.
No, it's January 3rd.
Okay.
And it's a state holiday. State workers get the day off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, any day you get a chance to have a day off, it's always really kind of nice. Now, what is the population of the entire state of Alaska? Because if you look on this population map, there is no red areas or very little. So what is the entirety of the population of Alaska?
So the whole state is about 720,000 people.
That's incredibly small.
The biggest population, yeah, it is. The biggest population is in Anchorage, which has about 290,000. And then Fairbanks and Juneau are second, third. There's about 31,000 in each of those places. And then the rest of the population is scattered out between hundreds of communities throughout the state.
Yeah. I mean, and you guys have lived in Hawaii, and that's about the same population in a much, much smaller area.
It is.
Yeah. So that just, again, that kind of just blows my mind. Now, in terms of the economy, now there's obviously, I would be remiss not to include the oil production up in that area. But obviously, there's a huge military presence up in Alaska that continues to this day. Employment through Anchorage International Airport, and then UNICE and all the salmon fishing that's up in that area as well. Mm-hmm. Any other thing come to mind in terms of just either general employers or, I mean, obviously, there's like some fishing equipment companies that are probably up in that area too.
Mm-hmm.
Some outdoor activities, stuff like that.
Here in Juneau, there's a little bit of mining, but it's not a huge industry throughout Alaska.
Yeah. But there's also tourism. Not so much this year, but
they actually canceled that whole thing. I mean, so for my viewers and listeners, my second cruise of the year got canceled today. So poor me, unfortunately. But there's always next year, so let's hope that things improve. Now, in terms of travel and transportation, Alaska is kind of a little bit unique in that there gets to be a point where certain roads are just not traversable. I mean, you see it in like shows like Ice Trucker or whatever the case is, where they literally can't even get from one city to another. And I don't even know how that, what do they do? They just have to wait it off? Do they snowplow? Yeah. I mean, what do they do?
I mean, especially some put roads all the way up north. They just don't drive them. Or people that I know that lived up there, they said, you need to make sure your car is running really well. And if you see anybody in winter, if it's like 30 below zero, if you see a car broken down, you do not pass them up. You stop. And no matter how little space you have in your car, you make room for them. So they have to just take that into account. Like, either don't drive or just make sure your car is running really well.
And also with Alaska, because it is comprised of a lot of small communities that are isolated from each other, the ferry system is actually considered part of the highway system.
Mm-hmm.
It's provided state funding, and it's a lifeline between a lot of these communities. Even Juneau is not accessible to the main road system. Mm. The only way in and out of Juneau is either by boat or by plane.
Right.
So over the years where there's been less money going into the state coffers, it's definitely affected the ferry schedule, and it puts a big impact on a lot of the communities that rely on that ferry system.
Right.
But apart from just the transportation, Amy, you were talking to me just earlier about that too, in that before the tourism community comes in during the course of the year, the locals will actually use that as kind of a little bit of a getaway.
They do, yeah. So when the ferries are not really busy with either people moving or shipments, the prices will go down for one thing, and they enjoy taking the ferry just for fun. They'll take a week or two off and buy a ferry ticket and just go on the same route that the cruise ship takes, stopping in the different communities and just looking at the really beautiful scenery. And that's even an option. Not a lot of people realize, instead of taking a cruise, take a ferry ride that they can do. But it's cheaper, probably, but, there's not a buffet.
Yeah.
I don't think there's going to be any more buffets any longer at this point. Or if they are, they're going to be, served by the workers at there. So it'll be a little bit of a different experience, though.
Right.
Now, the government of Alaska, I think, for the most part, it's pretty much red. It's Republican controlled for the most part. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's pockets of places. Juneau is more blue, definitely.
Yeah.
So.
And that can probably be because of a lot of the either the size of it or the tourism that comes into that area. So there's a little bit more of a diversity. Would you say?
Well, it's the state capital, so you get a little bit more of a diversity in the folks that come up here.
Okay. And then in terms of resources, now we've already talked about, you know, the fishing industry, the oil. There's some natural resources that are in that area as well, too. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it? What if you had to say that Alaska is known for one specific thing, what would you probably say that it's known for, whether that's a tourism thing or a resource?
Probably oil and fish.
Yeah. And fish, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, people come here. It's like a lifelong dream for a lot of people to come here just to see the wildlife and the majestic views and everything. So that's just nature is an attraction. So
absolutely. I don't want to mess that up. And then in terms of education, there is, of course, the University of Alaska at both Fairbanks. And I mean, there's a few different places. I think Anchorage has one as well. And the literacy rate, for the most part, is relatively high, except, you know, in some of the rural communities that we get into where it's not as funded. Would you agree with that?
Right. Yeah. I would say in Juneau, it's probably higher, Anchorage, Fairbanks, and then as you go to the outskirts, not as much, but they still get guaranteed an education out there. So there are schools out there. Distance learning, I know, has become in the past 10, 15 years has become more popular for students out in remote areas. So, and one interesting thing about Alaska is if your child doesn't go to the public school, you get a stipend for either distance learning or a charter school or a homeschool programs. And so that kind of helps those people in the remote areas, hopefully.
You know, funny that you mentioned stipend. I don't know if this is correct, so please correct me if I'm incorrect on this. But I thought I heard at one point or another that residents of the state of Alaska actually do get a stipend regularly because of the oil industry, or
is that
correct? That is correct. Okay.
They get a certain percentage every year. It's the
Alaska permanent fund dividend.
Yeah, the PFD, they call it. And it depending on how much oil, I guess, they get the year before.
Taxes that they generate from oil revenue.
Yeah. And
when we lived here before, we would get anywhere between $1,000 and $2,000 a year each.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, that's really nice, actually.
Yeah.
It's one of those controversial things because it's like, well, people don't really want the oil, you know.
Or the drilling, at least, yeah.
Drilling, but they do want their PFD. So it's basically.
It's like kind of like you gotta make that decision. It's kind of like,
about it, yeah.
And then in terms of safety and security, I don't think you guys have ever had any type of a terrorism activity or a threat, but there is a crime element that exists in all kinds of society.
Yeah, especially in the bigger cities. You know, I've heard up in Anchorage, there are gangs, and you'll have that kind of crime. But I think as you get to the smaller communities, not as much.
Because
everybody
knows
each other. So
worry about moose and bear more than you have to worry about
people.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, I do want to take the moment to thank you both very much for coming on my vlog and podcast. It really meant a lot to me. I really learned a lot and I appreciate it. And hopefully I'll be able to have you guys back if you enjoyed this for maybe a little bit more about Guam and Hawaii in the future.
Sure.
That'd be great, Scott. Thank
awesome.
You.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
thanks. And then for my listeners out there, for my students, if you have any questions or comments, you can certainly send them to me at scott@theprofessortravel.com. If you're watching on YouTube and you'd like to be notified about additional content as it comes up, click the bell icon right above us in order to be notified of that. If you haven't already subscribed, please click on the subscribe button. And if you like this content and you would like to see more of it, give us a like and we'll be definitely sure to put this your way. If you are, however, listening on the podcast, please give us a rating and review. We really appreciate that. Until our next time, Take care, everybody, and make every day a travel adventure. Bye-bye now.
The Professor Travel is a broadcast from Orange County, California. A transcript of each podcast may be requested by contacting The Professor Travel at his website, theprofessortravel.com. For opportunities to work with The Professor Travel, feel free to contact Scott at theprofessortravel.com or contact us through YouTube, Instagram, or Facebook at The Professor Travel or Twitter at TheProfessorTR1. Make every day a great day to have a travel adventure.